As we begin our Advent season, as we go through to the new year, we're going to ask some appropriate questions for this time of year. Today, I'm going to ask the question, what's on your credit card? I didn't even make a joke yet, but that's okay. You can enjoy that. How many of you have had fun dealing with the credit card companies on the phone? Anybody? Oh, not very many. You must have wonderful lives. Well, I came across a story, it's a true story actually, about the ridiculousness of some policies of certain financial institutions. I don't know which institution it was, but it was in the state somewhere. A lady died on a particular January. And Citibank, well, we now know the institution, billed her, believe it or not, for February and March for their annual service charge on her credit card. And then, of course, it didn't get paid, so they added late fees and interest on the monthly charge. The balance on her card at her death was actually zero. And now, because of these charges, there now was a balance of $60. And so a family member of the deceased tried to solve the problem, called up Citibank. I kid you not, this is the dialogue that went on between this person and the bank. Family member, I'm calling to tell you that she died in January. Citibank, well, the account was never closed and the late fees and charges still apply. Family member, maybe you should turn it over to collections. Citibank, since it's 2 months past due, it already has been. Family member, so what will they do when they find out she's dead? Citibank, either report her accounts to the fraud division or report her to the credit bureau, maybe both. Family member, do you think God will be mad at her? Citibank, excuse me? Family member, did you just get what I'm telling you? The part about her being dead? Citibank, sir, you'll have to speak to my supervisor. Duh. So the supervisor gets on the phone. Family member, I'm calling to tell you that she died in January. Citibank supervisor this time, the account has never been closed and the late fees and charges still apply. Family member, you mean you want to collect from her estate? Citibank, the supervisor kind of stammers a little bit. Are you the lawyer? Family member, no, I'm her great nephew. But he gives the Citibank person the lawyer's information and contact stuff. Citibank, could you fax us a certificate of death? Family member, sure. So they fax off a certificate of death. After they get the fax, Citibank says this, our system just isn't set up for death. I don't know what more I can do to help you. Family member, well, if you figure it out, great. If not, you can keep on billing her. I don't think she'll care. Citibank, well, the late fees and charges still apply. What's wrong with these people? Family member, would you like her new billing address? Citibank, that might help. Family member, she's found at Odessa Memorial Cemetery, Highway 129, plot number 69. Citibank, sir, that's a cemetery. Family member, well, what do you do with dead people on your planet? Isn't that incredible? You know, few things frighten Canadians more than the arrival every month of their credit card bill. On November 13th, 2013, the Globe and Mail reported that the average debt of every Canadian, well, I assume it's adults, has risen to the average, I kid you not, of $25,597. I think that's probably higher now, after 3 years. And that figure does not include mortgage debt. It also does not include the projected increase in debt that comes over the holiday season. On top of this, it was reported in the same article that Canadians generally are not saving very much. They are not building up their pensions for retirement. Now, you might be inclined to think that after I've shared this with you, And because I chose the title I did for today, that I'm planning to talk about finances and stewardship. Relax. It's an important subject, I get that. It's worthy of our attention, but fear not, this is not a stewardship sermon. I'm not coming out of the box with that for Sunday. Rather, what I want us to do is to think about how we feel. What are the emotions we experience as our credit card bill comes to us? I wanted to use it as a metaphor for something far more critical in our lives. It's like the modern proverb that asks, what do fathers get for Father's Day? Do you know this? Well, they get the Visa bill for Mother's Day. You see, with debt levels recorded in the Globe and Mail, I think it's safe to say that many Canadians, and likely some here today, simply dread, fear the day the credit card statement comes each month. Our credit card statements, though, are a pretty good picture of our priorities in life and our challenges as we go through this life. Our emotional reaction to our statements can vary month to month, usually related to the outstanding balance. I want us to think about how we feel when that balance is high. And we're doubtful that we can pay it all off to avoid those ridiculous interest rates and charges. Looking at the statement, you are likely going to feel some guilt. You're going to feel some regret over the things that you bought. You might feel some anger that a forced expenditure like an unexpected car repair occurred. And sitting down to do your own personal accounting. In our family, we call it doing the bookwork. You might despair over the numbers. You likely wish the whole mess would just vanish, go away. However, I bet at least most of us, at least once in our lives, have looked at that statement and thought to ourselves, I'm not ready for it. I'm just not ready. Even though we knew it was coming, we just don't feel we're ready to deal with it. When I read Matthew chapter 24, I get the same sort of feeling. Same kind of feeling I get when my statement of debts comes to me. I know it's coming. But I wonder, am I ready to face it? And unlike Visa or MasterCard, Jesus isn't going to send us a statement in the mail or something over email, but rather, he's coming himself. He's bringing himself to us. That's what Advent's about. Eugene Peterson, in the notes he writes for his Bible translation, The Message, points out something that I had never noticed before. It's really quite beautiful. God, Peterson points out, is always coming to us. Have you noticed that? The word come, C-O-M-E, is a gospel word. It's a gospel verb. The biblical distinctive, the Christian message, is not that God is, although that's part of it. The gospel distinctive is that God comes to us. That's what makes it different. He came before, which we're celebrating at Christmas. He's going to come again. This is what God does. He comes to us. God's not a professor who delivers some ideas from an ivory tower somewhere. He's not a social worker who arranges discussion groups for us so that we can get together and talk about all kinds of topics. He isn't the government or government agent who's bringing a list of regulations so that we can stay out of jail. That's not God. That's not Jesus. Our God comes to us. He comes like a neighbor who stands at the door and he knocks. He enters and he sits down with us and he enjoys our company. God comes to us primarily in the person of Jesus, and we often look for his coming in great, wonderful, sensational ways, but he keeps coming to us in the ordinary. He comes to us in our pain. He He comes to us in our doubt. He comes to us in our families. He comes to us in our work. There's not a place in this universe where he may not just show up. Or any time he may just sneak in. His coming can happen at any time. He's no respecter of what we are doing or who we are with. You know, it'll be like in Noah's day. Whereas the final preparations were being made for the ark, the people around Noah, they just went on with their ordinary lives. You know, people were working, they played, they celebrated as they always have. This despite Noah and his sons hammering gopher wood and putting pitch layers over the ark. When Jesus came as a baby in Bethlehem, only some shepherds, ordinary guys, and maybe eventually some wise men came too. God just keeps coming as a surprise. He comes wanting to make an accounting of his people. This whole section of Matthew is about being ready. And that's a major theme in the season of Advent, being ready. Getting ready for Christ's coming, both at Christmas and his return. It's about getting our house in order. It's about making sure our accounts, so to speak, are balanced. As Matthew 24:45 reads, "Who is a faithful, sensible servant to whom the master can give the responsibilities of managing his household and feeding his family?" There's something else that happens when Jesus comes that may cause us some fear. When Jesus comes, every time, we are never the same. Every time he comes, our lives get turned upside down. The Gospels are full of examples of that, full of lives that were just turned upside down when Jesus shows up. The disciples were never the same after they met Jesus. Zacchaeus, the man born blind in John chapter 9, the 10 lepers, Jairus' daughter who had died, Lazarus who also had died, so many more. In fact, everyone who met Jesus was never the same again. Even those who did not believe in him were never the same again. When Jesus comes to us, our relationships change, our priorities change, our behavior changes. In fact, everything about us changes. I read about a Presbyterian pastor in California who shares that she loves to go to Nordstrom's department store in Bel Air during the Christmas season. Now, she freely admits that she can't buy much in that store. It's very pricey. But she enjoys going into the store and wandering around and just enjoying the environment of the store. The Christmas decorations there are outstanding. They're beautiful. And the Christmas music, she says, lightens her spirit. On one of her visits, she was on the top floor of the store looking at some of the finest dresses in the world. When the elevator on that floor opened, and out stepped a woman who was clearly homeless. Her clothes were dirty, they were filthy. Her stockings were rolled down to her ankles, and she just stood there in the elevator holding an old gym bag in her hand. It was obvious this woman was completely out of place on this floor of Nordstrom's, and she was not about to buy anything. The dresses in that particular department were in the $1,000 category, and this person, this lady, was the kind of person who would never have that kind of money. And the pastor, observing this, expected at any moment for the elevator to reopen and the security guard to appear and to escort that woman out of the store. But that's not what happened. Instead, a very stately saleswoman quietly came over and said to the lady, "May I help you, madam?" And the bag lady said, "Yeah, I want to buy a dress." "What kind of a dress?" the saleswoman asked in a polite and dignified manner. "A party dress," the lady said. "Well, you've come to the right place," the saleswoman said. "Follow me. I think we have some of the finest dresses in the world." And the saleswoman then spent more than 10 minutes matching dresses with the woman's skin color and eye color, trying to ascertain which dress would best fit her complexion. And after selecting three dresses that same saleswoman deemed most appropriate for that woman, she ushered her into the dressing room to try on the dresses. Well, this drama was too much to avoid. So again, this lady pastor, this Presbyterian pastor, snuck into the dressing room in the next stall so she could hear what was going on. The homeless woman tried on the dresses with the saleswoman's patient help. But then after about 10 minutes, the homeless woman said sternly, "Oh, I've changed my mind. I'm not going to buy a dress today." "That's okay," the saleswoman said kindly. "But here's my card. Should you ever come back to Nordstrom's department store, I do hope you will ask for me, and I would consider it such a privilege to wait on you again." I bet you didn't know Jesus worked at Nordstrom's department store's ladies department, did you? I know Jesus is everywhere. He's coming into situations. He comes into lives. He makes a difference. This is what Advent celebrates. Can we see his coming in our everyday lives? Or are we oblivious to his grace, going about our business thinking that that's what's most important? Quite often we pray in our times of worship, "Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven." Is this truly what we desire? God's kingdom coming, his will being done? Advent is a time of recognition that God comes to his people. He dwells among his people. Advent is a time of preparing for his coming by getting our houses in order. It's also Advent, a time of God's invitation. "Come, participate in my kingdom," God says. A time of transformation and redemption and renewal. The issue is never with God's coming, as he will come to us whether we're ready or not. The issue is how we respond to his coming. How do we respond to his invitation? You know, just back a couple of pages in Matthew chapter 22, there's a story, a parable, about our reluctance to accept God's invitation. It's a parable about a king whose son was getting married. And the king prepared a great feast. And he sent out his servants. He said, "Look, go out, invite everybody you can to come to this incredible wedding feast." And the details of the feast were impressive. You know, great food, superb wine. But what did the people say to the servants? "We're too busy." They ignored the king's servants' invitation. Some had business interests that demanded their attention. Still others went so far as to kill the messengers who brought the gracious invitation. A reference made clearly to the fate of many of God's prophets over the years. Every time I read that story, I wonder, how could they refuse? Even if they cared little for the king himself, you know what? There's going to be great food and good wine. But still they wouldn't go. They're too busy, too self-absorbed to see the grace that's being extended, that's being offered to them. In other words, they're apt to say, "I can't be bothered." Is there not something sick in our souls when we can't be bothered to respond to God's invitation? I don't know about you, but every time I get to receive an invitation, the first thing I want to know is when, where. I want to know, on what day is this event going to happen? What time is it going to happen? Where is it going to be? Sometimes it's easy when we hold the invitation, thinking about those questions, we forget the very reason for the invitation in the first place. When God gives his invitation, many people are so focused on the details of when, not on the fact that we're being invited. We know that the Bible says no one But God himself knows the time of his son's coming, his son's return to us. But you know, that hasn't stopped people from speculating, has it? People like Hal Lindsey claim to possess special insight to decode the Bible and come up with a probable date for Jesus' return. Tony Campolo, brilliant man, he writes this. Whenever I'm asked to say something about the date of the second coming, I always answer, I'm on the welcoming committee, not the program committee. What a great answer. Our opportunity by God is to share the invitation to others, to welcome those to come. We're invited to continue in this work of the kingdom coming until Jesus comes again and brings himself to us. Because you know what? As I pointed out earlier, God's in the habit of coming to his people when they least expect it. They certainly weren't ready in Bethlehem. But are we ready? Does his coming fill us with joy and anticipation? Or are we fearful because we have some outstanding issues in our lives that need addressing? But we've been reluctant, or even negligent in dealing with some of those issues. I tell you, just as surely as that credit card bill will be coming after Christmas in January, Jesus is coming to settle accounts. Ready or not?